Welcome to this video series on sociocultural theory in language learning, teaching and assessment. In this part of the resource, we continue discussing how sociocultural theory can inform what's going on in the classroom. We'll talk about feedback. We will namely discuss what makes feedback useful in the classroom, the levels on which feedback works, and finally, we will contrast feedback with mediation. Let's think for a moment about a typical situation in a classroom when learners are engaged in working on a task. For example, in small groups, and the teacher would move around the classroom and check how successful learners are in completing the tasks, and the teacher would give feedback. And there are just some quite common types of feedback. Teacher can, for example, elicit, right, that a part of the learner's input in the response to is inaccurate, right, or just wrong or incomplete. Like here, I'm sorry, hey. The teacher can recast, especially if the thing is not that important, focusing, for example, on the communicative part of the task instead. That is, it is the most, actually, the most usual kind of feedback in the classroom when the teacher just recasts it back to the learner. So he think about it, yeah, he thought about it. Or they can simply inform the learner that their utterance is incorrect. Now, which of these is the most useful in the classroom? The question is not that simple. To start with, one should ask, useful for what? We are, of course, interested here in learner development, right? So the completion of the task actually becomes sort of a secondary, right? Unless we are testing our students and are very interested in where they are, right? So the goal for them is to develop, right? Well, researchers on language assessment and on feedback suggest that for the assistance from the teacher, from the feedback from the teacher to be useful for the learners, you should first of all tell the learner what the goal is. Or at the very least, there should be this joint understanding of what the goals are before the feedback is given. Then you should also tell the learner how they're doing in relation to this goal. And perhaps the most importantly, the feedback should tell the learner how they can reach the goal, right? Well, the latter is the most important, but feedback doesn't maybe give this information to the learner, or does it? Well, let's think about how the feedback can operate, or which levels the feedback operates on. Well, the first one is the so-called self level. It's very rarely discussed, but it's kind of important, right? Telling the learner how good they are as a language learner. Could be well done, for example. Second, in words, it works on the task level, right? That is, it tells the learner how well they have succeeded in completing the task they're working on. And this is the most obvious function of the feedback in the classroom, the first that comes to mind. But finally, there is a self-regulation level and a process level. And it's about the self-regulatory processing strategies for the learners. And at this level, the feedback stretches beyond the task at hand. And this level appears to be the most useful for learner development. But how do we know on which levels feedback operates? Let's consider this situation. The teacher reads the learner's utterance, and they say, "Took, okay," and the learner then self-corrects. Well, we can say that the teacher's feedback worked on the self level. So the learner recognized that they are not yet successful, right? in the constructions with modal verbs. It also naturally works on the task level. So the learner recognized that it was incorrect and what the correct answer was, and they corrected themselves. What about the self-regulation level? Here is where it connects to theoretical understanding, such as the zone of proximal development, and particularly mediation. And these concepts can help us to, or the teacher as well, to recognize which levels the feedback operates on for the learners, with the goal to support their development. Maybe in this one situation, the learner simply had two options, take or took, right? And the teacher said, like, took. So, okay, they should be take, without, like, really thinking about the why, how is it used. Consider this a bit longer interaction with the learner. Was working on a task eliciting English word derivation. And remember that instruction and assistance should target the zone of proximal development, which concerns the learner's abilities in the process of developing. Here it starts with the teacher, T, drawing the learner's attention to one particular sentence they wrote. Raise something for out of aware of the problem. And the learner's response then, that the learner suggests the word awareness. This already suggests the teacher that the learner knows something about the word formation in English. That is, they have some idea of affixation. It also hints the teacher that the learner maybe has an idea about the syntactic function of the word in a sentence. And the teacher decides to check this, and indeed leads the learner to state that this is a noun. But the learner doesn't know what it means. So once the teacher recognizes that, as the learner is silent, the teacher continues to reveal more information about the learner, or for the learner, then revealing the semantics of the affix, right, which words it attaches to, like adjectives. And this is not enough. The teacher then simplifies the task by proposing a sentence with a word that the learner must know. And indeed, the learner does. And then the learner transfers this to the task at hand. And the teacher ends the whole interaction by generalizing beyond the sentence at hand. An adjective, we need a noun that denotes a quality, right? So the teacher then guides the learner to think systematically about the affixation in English, in terms of their syntactic function, in terms of their semantics, right? And leading the learner to using metalinguistic terms and so on. We'll talk about the importance of these concepts in a different video. Here I would like to add that the whole process of interaction taken together, right? The assistant here worked for the learner on all three levels, right? As the teacher worked with the learner towards the reaching the target here. Creating together with the learner the zone of proximal development for them, right? Thinking about the word formation and then using derivational affixes in the English language. And this was, rather than just feedback to the learner, this was how you would mediate the learner, or then mediation, which is to summarize, if you think about mediation as instructional practice, it should be first of all contingent, meaning that is given when it's needed and taken away when it's not needed any longer, and graduated, giving the learner as much responsibility for their performance as possible in the given moment, starting at the very implicit end of the scale and gradually revealing more and more information for the learner until the learner is able to first complete the task, but more importantly, realize something or recognize something or understand something, gain new knowledge. And most importantly, it should be dialogic. That is, it should emerge in interaction with the learner. We'll talk about this when we'll discuss assessment in a subsequent video to this resource. Which means that feedback and mediation are actually two different concepts. Well, feedback can be a kind of mediation, but not all mediation is feedback. Mediation as teacher's practice in the classroom, well, first of all, it should always aim beyond the task at hand, right? It should aim at learner's development. It should be systematic based on the learner's responsiveness. We'll talk a bit more about this later on. And the intention, as I said, is always about moving learners' abilities forward. Not to complete the task. The task can be completed or cannot, not necessarily. But the important is that the learner's understanding develops, the learner's knowledge develops, the learner's thinking about language develops. In fact, the sociocultural theory, the thinking about the mediation, can also help us to explain how one and the same feedback can work on different levels for different learners. If we come back to this one, it can explain why for some learners this teacher's feedback can only work on the self level. They might not understand at all what's going on, what's the right response, and they just say, okay, I'm not a very good learner maybe here. For other learners, can work on the task level as well, meaning that they're able to complete the tasks. They say, like, okay, I had two options there, take or took, choose one. If it's not one, I figured out there should be the other, without like really thinking or understanding why. Right. For others, still can work on all the three levels that we'll discuss. So the teacher successfully then mediating learners' development. So the learners recognize that they need to use the bare infinitive without to as the model, setting the mood, right, for the action already tells us that the action is going to be the action that comes. Right. And so it happened in the past already, because it's good, and so you don't need to say took again, right? Signaling that it is also in the past then. Right. In other words, depending on the learner's zone of proximal development, or the range of abilities which are in the process of developing, which emerge in this activity with working with others, here with the teacher, feedback can be useful if the teacher is systematically and consciously makes it contingent, graduated, right, and make sure that it is dialogical, something which emerges in the interaction with the learner, builds on how the learner reacts or responds to our feedback. So this concludes this video on mediation in the classroom, in which we discussed feedback, mediation, and differences between them. There's always the links to other videos that could be useful for understanding this topic will be supplied in the video description. Thank you.